I did more.
You can see a little better there. That's great. We can go ahead and turn off the ones in the back. Everyone can just slowly kind of lay their head on one side. Don't worry, I'll say something, and when you wake up, I'll still be here. Walter, thank you for the kind words. Godly men only get that way because of godly mentors. And we've been very blessed. I know Gage will say the same, and Daniel as well, and many of us young guys, to have a lot of guys take us under their wings, tell us all the mistakes they made, which doesn't seem to matter because we make them again anyway, right? But no, they guide us and give us so much truth and wisdom. I'm pretty sure that when Walter and Daniel decided that, hey, I think on election night, we should give Brandon Blessed Are the Peacemakers. They got a nice little giggle out of that one. Actually, I kind of, when I got the topic, I started prepping a little bit, and it was my wife that said, hey, you know, that's election night that you'll be speaking. And I was like, oh, all right, that's my last year at the Bismarck lectureship, I'm sure. So take the sacrificial goat or whatever on this one. But when I was a child, I was really fortunate. We've talked, I'm going to wander a little bit, but we talked a lot about being raised in a godly family, and I really was blessed to have that. My father's a minister. My wife is the most, my mother is the most, I say she wrestles with God more than any person I know, and that's a compliment when I say that. And so I've just wonderful home. I'm the oldest of, I've got a younger sister and two younger brothers. And I say that because I've got a great story to start us off with. You know, we always went to church, and, you know, every week we were there. And my mom, she is so awesome. And so, you know those women that just, like, whatever they cook is, like, fantastic? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, any, you know, when you're going over to their house that it's just going to be the best meal you've ever had. My mom is not like that at all. And she doesn't care, but I tell you, her lasagna is the best lasagna I've ever had in my life. Besides that, I just stay away most of the time. So anyway, everybody else in our church is always excited to go home and eat the meal afterwards, you know. And for us, it was a little bit of a difference. And I got one brother that's 8 years younger than me. His name is Shane. And so he's the cutest little boy you'd ever seen. Blue hair. blonde hair, blue eyes, and he was the youngest, so, you know, he got whatever he wanted all the time. And I remember this one day, we had a van, you know, and there were six of us, and after church, I remember Shane just taking off running, threw open the sliding door, you know, jumped inside the van. I was like, what is going on with him? Because we always played after church, you know how the kids do, play, and then mom and dad have to drag us home, especially when we're going home to that meal. And okay, I might have said too far. Let's hope we don't at this point. Anyway, so it was real weird, and finally we all kind of settle into the car, and we're all get in there, and then finally dad's the last. And dad hadn't preached that day. The other minister had, and dad hops in, and he shuts the door, and my youngest brother goes, he crosses his arms like this. He's, I don't know, five or six, about the age. What age is this on? Five? Yeah, right about there. And he crosses, actually looked a lot like that. Crosses his little arms and he goes, well, I'm assuming we're going to Papa John's. Everybody in the car is, but he can do no wrong. You know, I would have got my punishment for saying something along those lines. But by then, you know, they were like, what? And I remember my dad looking back like, who's this little boy in charge of our car? And so my dad kind of goes, why would you assume we're going to Papa John's? And Shane goes, didn't you pay any attention to the sermon today? And my dad was like, what? You know, like, what? And Shane goes, he preached, blessed are the pizza makers. Now, pizza's my favorite food, so I took this as a great opportunity. You know, and we all start busting up laughing, but then I start this slow song, if you will, and I just, me and the brothers and sisters, all we are saying is give pizza a chance. And so we just kept singing it and singing it and singing it. And we went right by Papa John's, and we're all like, no, no. And I know my dad, you know, he wasn't going to say it, but there was a roast on, and we don't like mom's roast a whole lot. But It's good to floss with, but we got a little past Papa John's, and he kind of, I saw him look at Mom, and I was like, oh, we got a chance. And Dad turns the car, and we all go, yeah. And he goes, come on and hop aboard the pizza train. And I was like, yeah, pizza train. So, what an easier topic to talk about tonight. Blessed are the pizza makers. I've been really encouraged by all the things we've talked about so far. I want to jump into a couple things. The first is just a little background that I want us to go to. When we traditionally think about this moment, this Beatitudes moment, the Sermon on the Mount moment, we talk about, and we have traditionally in scholarship as well as from our pulpits and our sermons, we talk about this moment where Jesus, like Moses, right, goes up on the hill like Moses goes up on the hill, and where Moses got the commandment, the law, now you have Jesus coming down, and it even seems to maybe mirror that some, right? In the sermon, you have these nine statements that start off. Has anybody heard this? I'm hearing some shaking go. Okay, there's a few maybe around. And you come back with this idea of Jesus as the new lawgiver, the new rule giver. And of course, this law isn't like the old law. It's a new law, and this law is based on grace and all these things. And it's an interesting concept, and everyone looks lost, so maybe you guys haven't heard that before. I was preaching that my whole life. What was my dad thinking? But it's an interesting concept that seems to be a little bit far off there. Because one of the things we've talked a lot about this weekend is this isn't the new law, right? This isn't the new rule book. And really, if you look from a scriptural standpoint, the background to what Jesus is talking about, you come not from the law giving, but from the figures of the wisdom literature, from Solomon, from David. And if you go, you can see this. Look at Psalm 128, 1 through 2, and listen to this language and see if it sounds familiar. Blessed are, anyone say that? Blessed, does that sound familiar? Have we heard anything blessed so far this weekend? Right? Blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in obedience to Him. That sounds just like Jesus, doesn't it? Can you hear the echo in His words there? Who walk in obedience to Him. You will eat, and this is where it changes a little bit. You will eat the fruit of your labor. Blessings and prosperity will be yours. And see, from the wisdom literature standpoint, the concept is you live in such a way that you will eat the fruit of your labor. Now, that's not some distant blessing that will come to you, right? But that's you put it down now, and then soon you will reap what is coming to you, okay? And that's what the wisdom literature teaches. This is how you live a good life so that life can be good. And that works so well for David and for the teaching of Solomon until the exile happens. You know what I'm talking about with the exile? The Babylonian Empire coming in and taking the Israelites off. And can you imagine reading this psalm while you're in a distant land that doesn't belong to you, under captivity of another nation, and it's saying, blessed are all who fear the Lord, and you have lived your life fearing the Lord. And then you read, who walk in obedience to Him, and you have lived your life in obedience to Him, and yet you see no fruits of your labor. And you see no blessings or prosperity. And so at that point, this wisdom literature takes on a bit of a different tone. And it hits this desperation time. And if we go and read even further into the tradition of the wisdom literature, you go to Daniel 12:12-13, and listen to this language and how it hits a new genre. Blessed is the one who waits for. See how it starts the same, right? Blessed. Same as the words of Jesus. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. As for you, go your way to the end. You will rest, and then at the end of your days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. That makes sense in their context, doesn't it? Because the wisdom that says prosperity is going to be yours now, that blessing is going to be yours now, when you're in exile doesn't make sense. But the wisdom that says if you'll just endure, right?
If you'll just wait this out, someday awaiting you is this time that will come, right? And it will be yours. You just got to hold on. And with both of those things in mind, Jesus speaks again. And he says, have we read, I was trying to think today while I was going through this again, have we read this entire section yet? I don't think we have we? So let's just go there. Let's go Matthew 5. And I want you to listen to, what's the setting in Matthew 5 to begin with? Anyone? He's on a hill. Did somebody say that? Good job. You got it. What's happened right before that?
Large crowds.
Large crowds. Good, right? Has he chosen his apostles yet? Yep, right? He's got the 12. He's got the crowds now following him, right? And he takes this crowd and he goes up onto this mount, right? And he has healed many of these people. He's done all of these kingdom work things already. And it's time to teach now. And you can imagine in the crowd are those people, all these people. And I like that this was already spoken to a lot. But let's listen to these words. He began to teach them saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." You hear that language? Hear it echoing through Daniel there, echoing all the way back into the Psalm of David. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And let's continue. "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." See, Jesus takes both the wisdom and this voice of David and of Solomon that says you must seek the Lord now in this time, and you must live here for the Lord. You who are poor in spirit, right? You who hunger and thirst for righteousness. He takes that voice and he adds on top of it the voice of the apocalyptic language, the voice that is awaiting release from exile, and adds that because your blessing as you live it out now will be written in the time to come. And he combines the fullest thought coming in together there. I just think it's an awesome thought, isn't it? And so that speaks into kind of the 1 ounce of the context. But if we're going to talk about blessed are the peacemakers, we have to have the Jewish historical concept. So just hold on. We've got the one lens in place. We're going to put the other lens in place, and then we're going to move on to some more practical sides. But we need to know Jewish political history at this time, because you can't talk about blessed are the peacemakers as Jesus does it without knowing some. And I just want to point out 4 major, we'll call them battles or wars that take place in Jewish history around the time of Jesus. The first, as most of us probably know, is the Maccabean Revolt. Okay, who has heard of the Maccabees? So I know. Okay, about everyone. So we've got that fairly covered. And this happens just about, that's the wrong date. It should be 163 to 64 BC. And it ends, what, that's about 60 years removed from the birth of Christ, about another, 90 from his teaching, something like that. So in the same context, generations before have taken place where the Roman government in place has been overthrown by these Jewish zealots who know that Jerusalem belongs to Israel, right? And if we are going to be the people God wants us to be, we have to have political power. The only way to have political power is to do what? Guerrilla warfare and kick out the Romans. Okay, by the sword. This picture is a really famous picture of the Maccabean Revolution. Okay, we'll move faster. 66 through 73, this is when the temple is destroyed. This is just 30 years removed from the time of Jesus. Still the same political climate, okay? and you have the Jewish uprising that takes place again, and essentially Rome comes in and squashes it, destroys the temple, and then finally they fall in Masada in 73 AD. Okay? And it's the same guerrilla warfare, the Jewish people rising up with the swords, right? Do you get that in your mind? And then you have two more. At the 115 to 117, you have the Kedos War, or known as the Rebellion of the Exile. And then in 132 to 135, so in a 200-year period surrounding the time of Christ, you have these four major Jewish wars that take place. Now think about following Jesus. What do you expect from the Messiah? If you're a Jew,
earthly king.
That's right. You expect your earthly king. And when he takes you up on a mount to teach you, what do you think you're expecting to be taught about?
War.
I would venture to say they even expect to be put into their battalions, to be put into their regiments at this point, right? Walking up the hill with Jesus. And in the midst of that, he walks through the crowd and chooses the people you would never start a revolution with ever, right? And right in the heart of that, he says, "Blessed are you who overtake Jerusalem." No. Blessed are the peacemakers. What a thought. One of the scholars I read had said, it's like throwing a hand grenade into a beautiful garden. That's the way it would have hit them. Okay? And I wonder tonight, as we vote, tonight as we see a great power struggle still taking place, right? I wonder what we think our calling is as Christians. I'll just say bluntly, I've been fairly disappointed in the way we've acted as Christians during this election process. Maybe it's just me. Maybe, I don't know. But I wonder if when people look at us, they would say, oh, yeah, blessed are the peacemakers. That's all I'm going to touch on for the political. But that's the thought I want to leave you. Okay, so let's move on here. Okay, I can go. I don't want to hit that button. I'm working backwards. If you turn over Matthew 5, we're going to dig a little deeper here. So that, let's go. Blessed are the peacemakers. And then what is the promise at the end of that? For they shall be called what? Sons of God. You ever been called your father's child or your mother's child? You ever heard that expression? Oh, you are your father's child. You know, usually it's not a good thing, is it? Not when I'm cooking. Just delete it when I'm done.
Yeah. It's going on the internet.
Yeah, it's bad news for me all the way around. No, you know, it's good and bad. I remember a couple instances where I was called my father's child. The one just happened, I'm embarrassed to say, just happened a few years ago. Down in Arkansas, there's this river called the Little Red River, and it's a great trout stream. I know in Arkansas there shouldn't be trout, but there's trout. And it dumps out of the bottom of Heber Springs Lake, and the water is just freezing. And my parents had rented a cabin when they came down to visit. I was at school, and we went to visit, and all, you know, and we all stayed in this cabin, and you walked down on this deck that was right on the river, you know. And, you know, we were sitting there, and it's Arkansas, it's midsummer, it's, you know, just the most miserable place you could possibly want to be at. 95, 100 degree, humidity just through the roof, and you're just sitting there, just drenched in sweat. And that water that we know is way too cold to swim in. Now, you guys from up north, you know when water's too cold to swim in, right? Like, physically, your body does not allow you to swim in it. Well, we're stupid. And I look at my dad and I go, I think we could probably feel pretty good if we jumped in there. And my dad's a really great swimmer. We're water people. So I was like, I'll tell you what. Or no, he says to me, I'll tell you what. I'll even race you across the river and back. And I was like, Father, this is my chance. I can finally beat my dad in something. You know, I've got him. So we get ready and we stand off the edge of the water and we both dive in and we both, oh man, we just start stroking as hard as we can. Our heart rate's pumping and we're flying across this river. Haven't really hit us yet. You know what I mean? Get about three quarters and I notice we're both kind of haven't breathed yet, you know? And then we hit the other side and I kind of look over at him and he kind of looks over at me and we're both like, what are we doing? But I'm going to beat him, you know? And so we turn around and I notice noticed all of a sudden his arm kind of goes limp, and I'm like, why are you doing that? And then my arm does the same thing, and they're just frozen. I don't know. They just, but everything hits you, and we just stopped and both kind of looked at each other like, we're going to die in this river that's 6 feet deep and 100 degrees. We're going to freeze to death, you know? So we both just kind of like paddle with the other arm and kick with a foot all the way back to the boat, and my mom is sitting there, and of course she's just laughing, and she pulls my dad out, and only like a wife can say, she looks at him and goes, you're an idiot, you know? And then she pulls me up and she goes, and I'm expecting the same thing, she goes, you are your father's child. But then another time I remember being called my father's child, and this one means a lot to, more to me. First time I ever preached, my dad is a wonderful preacher. The first time I ever preached, we had a man at our church who was mentally handicapped, and he was a very, very nice guy, but he just, you know, wasn't, and he was in charge of some things around the church, and he was really a wonderful guy. And after I finished preaching, some of the people come to me and, you know, nice job, thank you, thank you. And he came up to me, and he somehow, and I got caught pointing while I was talking yesterday, but he always pointed at you while he talked to you. That was, he had picked that up somewhere. And he came in like this, and he said, you are, all he said, you are your father's child. And that just meant the world to me. It meant I had the character of my dad, right? I had the quality of who he was, right? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Now, this text is linked directly with what he's going to talk about in Matthew. I went backwards too far. Let's go back here. Turn over to Matthew 5, 43 through 48. These texts, of course, it's linked to begin with because it's still a part of the same sermon, but also if you listen to the language, he's definitely expounding upon this thought that he's already laid forth. He said, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Let's just stop there and go home tonight because that works, right? You have heard it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be, you hear this language? That you may be sons of your Father in heaven. Hear that link there? He causes, he's not done now, he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even the pagans do? But be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. It's a powerful passage, isn't it? It hits you hard. Because the essence of God is to be a peacemaker. Is to be a reconciler. So what does it mean to be a peacemaker? I think there's three scriptures. I don't know what this thing's doing now. There's three scriptures that seem to really speak into this, and I want to go to them now. Go ahead and turn over to Ephesians 2. What time am I supposed to be done at?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Ephesians 2. We'll start in verse 11. Think about this. Therefore, remember that formerly you who are Gentiles by birth. How many of you in here are Gentiles by birth? I love this because you know what's funny? I set people up all the time for this question. I said, how many years were we held in Egyptian slavery? And people answer me every time. And I go, no, you weren't. You're a bunch of Gentiles. Remember that. Because we come to this from a Jewish mindset, like we were God's chosen people. We are not. So listen. Therefore, remember that formerly you who are Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves the circumcision, that done in the body by the hands of men, remember that at that time you were separated from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now, I love these but now statements, don't you? But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away have been brought near through the blood of Christ. The first reconcile, the first peacemaking that we do is our relationship with God. And it's only based, and I've been blessed by so many men who have spoken this weekend on this topic, it is only based on what God has done for us. But now you who are in Christ Jesus have been brought near. You have been reconciled. Peace has been made between us and God. It's a powerful thought, isn't it? And then he goes on, for he himself is our peace. See, this is where it gets a little tougher. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, by abolishing in his flesh the law with its commandments and regulations. His purpose was to create himself in himself one new man out of the two, thus doing what? Making peace. And in this one body, to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. He came and preached peace to you who were far away, and peace to those who were near. For through him we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. See, the peace relationship that God gives us and grants us also means that we are brought into peace with our fellow man. Let's look at another scripture that talks about this same thing. Matthew 5, right before he's talked about it. Matthew 5, 23. Right in between the two passages we've just looked at, he says this, and I think it's such a neat passage. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Now the point of this gift at the altar is what? To fix your relationship with God. To make peace with your relationship with God. And Jesus says to them, before you ever dare to try and have peace with God, to reconcile with God, you first go and reconcile your relationship with your fellow man. And I would venture to bet that the greatest offering God has ever received is when his people find peace between one another. It's a powerful concept. It lays out like this. There's one more arrow. See, you cannot have peace with God without having peace with your fellow man. It's just the way it is. I have a few other things I want to share, but I just want to end with this thought. I'm sure that I was asked to speak on peacemaking because we merged three churches there in Helena. That's been I'll just be honest, it's been a very hard thing. Very difficult. Right, Roy? We've had lots of very difficult conversations. And I can tell you story after story. And there's incredible stories. We got men that haven't spoken in years having coffee together every week, okay? We have people that, it's just one after another like that, okay? It's incredible. But people ask me all the time, how'd you guys do it? I'm getting phone calls now. How'd you guys do it? How'd you guys do it? And they always want my, 3-point plan or something like that. You know what I'm talking about? And I've reflected on that a lot in the last year. And I've given some bad answers over the last year that I have. But this is what I've settled on. This is just, we'll end with this time. The reason those churches merged in Helena was because those sons of God decided it was no longer acceptable to have broken relationships in their life. Well, let me put that in the positive light. Blessed are the peacemakers, for you shall be called your Father's child. I hope that if you have any relationships that need reconciled, that you go and do it, that we can be called a people devoted to peacemaking.